Good morning. It's great to see you today. Thank you so much, Stephen, for that wonderful prayer and for Josh and the team for leading us in worship this morning. I'm going to get some help from you right off the bat here today, if that's okay. I'm wondering if you can be thinking about a famous person in your life, or not in your life, but a famous person that you kind of admire or look up to. Maybe they're an actor or an actress, maybe a musician, maybe a sports star, and maybe you could call their names out to me this morning. Anybody? Kobina, yes. Kobina is always like famous everywhere. Where you can get his autograph after the service. I think it's $20. Is that right, Kobe? Okay. Kobina is a very, very famous. I think Kathy at the first service hollered out somebody, one of the royal family members. Was it that you, Kathy? Yeah, so if you think about, if you're online and suddenly you see an advert or a headline pop up across your screen and it says, former chef, former driver, former housekeeper for Meghan Markle tells all, are you going to click on it? Probably, right? Or your famous musician or your famous sports star. If a headline pops up with their name in the title that says, former chef, former housekeeper, former driver tells all, you are curious. What is life like behind those doors when the gates of their mansion close up? What is life really like behind the scenes? These kind of tell-all books are so famous. Right now, we're seeing a whole slew of them come out about the former president of the United States, and all the former staff members are now have all these stories that they would love to tell for $39.99 and for you to read them and to kind of learn and discover what life was really like behind the scenes. Well, today, we're going to look at a similar kind of story. Story of a wealthy couple, Abram and Sarai, kind of mothers and fathers of the faith, and a little bit of what life was like behind the scenes, a little bit of a tell-all story about what life was like in their home. Now, before we do that, and we read about other people's sins and shortcomings, let me just remind you that we are reading in the Old Testament, in the book of Genesis, an ancient document. And as we read these ancient documents, we come across practices and cultural habits that were normal in those days that seem cruel and are cruel in our days. We are not unfamiliar with this reality. Even practices from not that long ago seem unjust to our eyes. We're in a season of our eyes and ears kind of being awakened to things, and we're learning so much more now about maybe ways that we spoke or acted in previous days that are now, we realize, unjust. Even if you're on Disney Plus and you watch maybe an old movie or television show that you grew up watching as a kid, now comes with this disclaimer, one that says this: this program includes negative depictions and or mistreatments of people or cultures. The stereotypes were wrong then, and they are wrong now. Well, why do I mention this? Because if you are a person that's reading the scriptures, and maybe you're new to reading the scriptures, it's easy to think that when we read stories about main characters in the Bible, like we will today, the person of Abram and his wife Sarai, that they're kind of the good people in the Bible, and therefore everything they do is good, and all the ways that they act are right. And this would be a mistake. The only good person in the Bible that we should look at in every action and every behavior and try to take it upon into our own lives is the person of Jesus. Every other person in the scriptures, we must read with the understanding that they have sinned and fallen short of the glory of God. Meaning that as we read, we have to ask ourselves, is this story simply describing what happened, as it does in the passage we're going to look at today? Or is it prescribing how you and I ought to live? Is it telling us the story, this is what happened in the lives of these people? Or is it showing us how we ought to conduct ourselves? As a student of the scriptures, as a Christian who wants to grow in their faith and better understand God's call on their lives, this is the one of the skills that we all have to continue to get better at. So with that reminder, let me just say today, as we look at a passage in Genesis chapter 16, that the backdrop for all of these stories in Genesis is Genesis chapter 12, and God's three promises to Abram and Sarai, which were children, land, and that he would bless them and make them a blessing. all of which were completely impossible for this couple and completely impossible for them to pull off on their own. And they would only become possible through the supernatural act of God's grace in their life. Because they had no land, they were not able to have children, and they were not able to generate the kind of supernatural activity from their sinful, broken lives that would ultimately be a blessing in the lives of others. So today we're in Genesis chapter 16. If you'd like to follow along, maybe on your phone, or if you're using the Bible in the seats in front of you, it would be page 20, page 21. And this is kind of a tell-all story. It's a tell-all story about Abram and Sarai and their servant Hagar and kind of how that all story goes down. But I'm going to need your help today as I read it. Now, the 9 o'clock service, they all had coffee this morning and they were on it. Okay, so I'm going to need to see if you can kind of participate at the same level, David. I'm going to read this kind of chapter 16, the first few verses, kind of slowly. And then I'm going to pause and I'm going to point to you. And when I point to you, I want you to say out loud, what could go wrong? And I want you to say it with as much sarcasm as you can generate. Or some of you have the spiritual gift of sarcasm. This won't be difficult for you. If you're doing this at home, I invite you to participate as well. Are you ready? Let's have a practice run. I'm going to point to you, and you're going to say, what could go wrong? Ready? That's good. That's going to work. All right, I'm going to read for you the first few verses of Genesis chapter 16. I'm going to pause. I'll point to you, and you will exuberantly be sarcastic. All right, chapter 16, verse 1. Now Sarai, Abram's wife, had borne him no children, but she had an Egyptian slave named Hagar. So she said to Abram, "The Lord has kept me from having children. Go, sleep with my slave. Perhaps I can build a family through her." Exactly. Abram agreed to what Sarai said. So after Abram had been living in Canaan 10 years, Sarai, his wife, took her Egyptian slave Hagar and gave her to her husband to be his wife. He slept with Hagar, and she conceived. Right? What could go wrong with that story? How could any of that result in trouble? Well, let me just kind of keep reading for you to give you a sense about what happens next. When she knew she was pregnant, this is Hagar, she began to despise her mistress. Then Sarai said to Abram, "You are responsible for the wrong that I am suffering. I put my slave in your arms, and now that she knows she is pregnant, she despises me. May the Lord judge between you and me." "Your slave is in your hands," Abram said. "Do with her whatever you think is best." Then Sarai mistreated Hagar, so she fled from her. The angel of the Lord found Hagar near a spring in the desert. It was the spring beside on the road to Shur. And he said, "Hagar, slave of Sarai, where have you come from and where are you going?" Now, it's easy to look at these people's lives and forget that everybody has a story. What was Sarai's story? Well, she was unable to conceive. Psychologically, being unable to conceive is devastating in ancient times and today as well. And while it might seem culturally old-fashioned, in Sarai's time, a woman's worth was deemed by her ability to have children. Children were a mother's capital. And she had the added pressure of this child that she was going to have weren't just for her and her husband's own fulfillment. It was part of God's promise to build a nation. It was part of God's plan to bring his blessing to the world. The promise had been made clear that the child was going to come from her and Abram's flesh, not from Eleazar, as we looked at last week, and certainly not from Hagar. So Sarai is tired of waiting, and she hatches a plan. She asks Abram to go and sleep with her maidservant, and I realize that even as we hear that, that's awful, and it's cruel. In that culture, it was legal, and it was culturally acceptable. In fact, it meant that if when Hagar had a baby, the baby would legally belong to Sarai. Sarai would control the child, decide how the child was raised, would make life decisions for the child, and legally would be counted as one of Sarai's children. Now, I remind you, this practice is not condoned in the scriptures. It happens in the scriptures, and everywhere it happens, it turns into a disaster, especially for the women who bore the brunt of the consequences. But if we remember that in these times it was normal, and if we put ourselves in Sarai's shoes, who's been trying to have a child for 10 years, in her mind, this was close enough. God has promised me a child. It is not working. And so I've got a plan, and this is close enough. So, Abram, without any reluctance, without any hesitation, without any sober second thought, agrees to sleep with Hagar, and she conceives. So, their plan is working. Sarai and Abram's plan is just working as they had planned. So, well, what could go wrong? Well, actually, this passage shows us, and let me just mention six of the ways in which it went wrong, and there's more than that. First, Hagar discovers that she's pregnant, and she starts to despise her mistress, Sarai. Literally, it says, Sarai appeared small to Hagar. Hagar the slave had something that Sarai the master did not have. It gave her a sense of power, and it gave her a sense of license to despise Sarai. Second, Sarai discovers that even though her plan worked, it did not give her the joy that she had hoped for, but it brought suffering, regret, and jealousy. In fact, in verse 5, Sarai says to Abram, you are responsible for, and the word she uses is Hamas. Now, how many of you read the news and are familiar with the name Hamas? It's the name of a terrorist organization in the Middle East that has done a very good job at capturing their mission in their name. Their job is terror and suffering. This is the word that Hagar uses to describe what is going on inside of her after her plan is successful. She's in turmoil. And the pain of watching Hagar pregnant is greater than the pain of her infertility. Third, she blames Abram. This is your fault. Does this sound familiar? If you think back to the Garden of Eden in Genesis chapter 3, Adam and Eve blaming each other for the sin that they brought into the world. Fourth, Abram is completely passive. He is the stereotypical passive man in this story. He takes no responsibility. He passes the buck. She's your staff. She's your problem. And he pretends as if he's got nothing to do with the situation here. Fifth, Sarai starts mistreating Hagar. She has contempt for Hagar. Before she was a slave, but now this slave is trying to be my equal. She's been able to provide what Abram could not. And the language that's used here in the original language is the same kind of language that's used to describe the way the Egyptians treated the Israelites when they were in slavery, meaning it was bad, and implying probably that Sarai physically abused Hagar. Finally, Hagar, the slave with no legal rights, a foreigner with no place to go, and nothing to her name except this child, flees to the wilderness, which is where things go to die. This is a family that's at the end of their rope. They got what they wanted. They took matters into their own hands. They created a plan. They executed it to their very best with all of their sinfulness mixed in with it, and it's created an enormous mess. As I read the story, I can't help think about Genesis chapter 12, verse 3, where God says, I will bless you so that you could be a blessing. Is there any blessing in this story? As these people took matters into their own hands, everyone abandons their trust of God. Their sinfulness shapes the story. Abram is mad. Sarai is jealous and mad. Hagar despises Sarai, and Hagar has to flee to the wilderness. And Romans sums up what we're seeing best. All have sinned, and they've fallen short. They've missed the mark of God's plan and intention for all of their lives. Now, the rest of Genesis 16 and chapter 17 is the story of God stepping into this mess. And we won't read it all here today. I encourage you to go and do so later. But here's what we're going to see. After Abram, Sarai, and Hagar have all done damage, God steps in and he gets to work. And his work is best described in one word. And that word is grace. Let me just start with Hagar. Hagar goes missing. She has this baby. She feels the threat and she flees. Abram does not go looking for her. Sarai does not go looking for her. but the Lord goes looking for her. And this, again, this should sound familiar to us. Back in the garden, Genesis chapter 3, Adam and Eve sin. They flee the garden, and what happens? Genesis chapter 3, verse 9, the Lord goes looking for them. This is unheard of. Hagar is an Egyptian maidservant, and the God of Israel goes looking for her. Next, the Lord blesses her. This is what he says. I will increase your descendants so much that they will be too numerous to count. Now, if you've been a part of this series since day one and were awake for some of it, you will remember that this was the exact promise that God gave to who? To Sarai and to Abram. God takes this incredibly generous and enormous promise, and he gives it to Hagar as well. The mandate that God had given to them, he shares with Hagar, promising her that as difficult as this situation is, as tough as your circumstances are right now, I am going to bless your family in ways that you could not even imagine. Now, Hagar in this moment is so overwhelmed that she cries out to the Lord. And we discover in this moment that Hagar is the only person, lady in the Old Testament that gets called by name. Not only that, she's the only woman in the Old Testament to give God a name. In verse 13, she says, she gave this name to the Lord who spoke to her. You are the God who sees me. For she said, I have now seen the one who sees me. Abram didn't see me. Sarai didn't see me. I was just a pawn. I was a piece of property. I was an object in their plan to accomplish, to get whatever they wanted out of this life. But the Lord sees me, and he came looking for me. This reminds me of the story of Mark's gospel, the story of blind Bartimaeus. Jesus had been in the community of Jericho. He was about to leave. As he was traveling on the road outside of town, there were numerous beggars along the road. One of them was a man by the name of Bartimaeus. And day after day, people passed by him. He asked for money. People passed him by. But he knew that Jesus was coming, and he calls out to Jesus. And the words that he uses to call out to Jesus have become the words of a prayer that Christians around the world, even to this day, continue to pray. Jesus, Son of David, have mercy on me. Bartimaeus, a beggar on the street, the most unlikely person like Hagar, becomes the very first person in the Gospels to name Jesus as the Son of David. And Jesus surprises everybody, and he stops, and he turns, and he walks toward Bartimaeus, and he gives him back his sight. Both Hagar and Bartimaeus remind us this message of the gospel, which is that God sees us in our circumstances, no matter what we've done, no matter what has happened to us, and God sees us in that moment. And he moves towards us with his grace. And I wonder today if you need to be reminded of that. No matter where you are in life, no matter what your circumstances, no matter what someone has done to you, or maybe what you have done, maybe it feels like no one else around you gets what you're going through. They do not understand how difficult it is. They do not understand how complex your situation is. The Lord saw Hagar. The Lord saw Bartimaeus. And today he sees you as well. So the Lord reaches out and comes to Hagar and meets her with his grace. What's he going to do with Abram and Sarai? What is he going to do with this couple? The theme of chapter 17 really could be the theme of the word names. Abram and Sarai needed to learn to see God like Hagar did, to trust him. Abram and Sarai needed to learn that God, if they were going to be God's blessing in the world, they needed to learn to see people as God sees people. So God changes Abram's name to Abraham, the father of nations. He changes Sarai's name to Sarah, meaning princess. Now, as we read this story, we realize neither of those words are true of them yet. Abram is still not the father of nations, and Sarai, certainly after reading her behavior in chapter 16, no one would say that sounds like a princess. But God knows the work that he wants to do in their lives. God changes people's names in scriptures to reflect his intention for their lives, maybe not necessarily their current state. while they were offenders, God says, my work in you is not complete. God has grace for both the offended and the offender and refuses to give up on both. As we saw in Romans 3, all have sinned and fallen short of God's glory. So God changes their names in chapter 17. He gives them this new covenant, the covenant of circumcision. He reminds them again that my promise is going to come true in your life. And now surely, surely this couple that have been going for the last five chapters, trying to learn to trust God and finally take him seriously, surely they've got it now, right? I mean, you and I would, right? Unfortunately, no. Abram with a new name, father of many. A new covenant, this covenant of circumcision, reveals he's still struggling to trust God with his promise. Listen to verse 17 and 18. God makes the promise that he's going to have a child, and he's going to have a child from his own flesh. Abram fell down, face down. He laughed, and he said to himself, will a son be born to a man 100 years old? Will Sarai bear a child at the age of 90? And Abram said to God, if only Ishmael might live under your blessing. Abram laughs, a laugh of mockery at God's promise to him. Because all Abram can operate with is what he sees. And all that he sees is Ishmael. God, enough with your promises. We got a kid here. Just use him. If only Ishmael. Have you ever laughed at God? Ever looked at the circumstances you're in and the obstacles or the situation you're a part of right now and just laughed and thought, there's no way God can work in this situation. There's no way God can break through. There's no way he can reach me. There's no way he can bring the things that I need in my life. Any people working in the public school system, looking ahead at this week, almost laughing at God, saying, really? Really? God laughs at Abram's promise. So God gives one more name. He tells Abram and Sarah, I'm going to give you the name of the child that will come from your flesh. As he does, God reveals his grace, his patience, his faithfulness, and I like to think maybe a sense of humor. He tells Abram that he's to name his son Isaac. And Isaac literally means laughter. Sarai laughed at God, Abram laughed at God. Both of their laughter was a form of mockery. But God does not give them this name to remind them of their mocking laughter. Rather, laughter is going to come from a place of joy because God is going to be faithful to them. God is going to pour out his grace on their lives. He's going to keep his promise. And when he does, there will be joy. So much joy that the heart cannot contain it, and it comes out in laughter. There's a wonderful translation in the New Testament called The Message, and Eugene Peterson, a theologian who's since passed away, translated a number of years ago. One of my favorite parts of that translation is the work that he did on the Beatitudes, the teaching of Jesus found in Matthew chapter 5. And one of the lines that he has there, we'll put it up on the screen here from Matthew chapter 5, says this: you're blessed when you're at the end of your rope. With less of you, there is more of God and his rule. The story that we read this morning in Genesis chapter 16 is a story of Abram, Sarai, and Hagar, who all got to the end of their rope. They had exhausted their ability to try to fix and make this situation any better. And it was at that moment when they got to the end of the rope that God steps in with his grace and met them with exactly what they needed. And today I wonder about you, if you're feeling a little bit at the end of your rope. And while that might feel scary and that might feel like bad news to us today, if maybe it's the exact space where God is going to meet us with his grace, that God will give us exactly what we need for this time that we're living in. It's my hope and it's my prayer for you today that God would meet you with his mercy and grace, and you could lean into it with everything that you have and receive from him. Let me pray. Lord, today as we meet you in these moments, as we unpack these scriptures and see these stories of these lives so marked by struggle, by weariness, by faithlessness. And yet, Lord, in such sharp contrast, we see your mercy, patience, and grace poured out in their lives. And Lord, it just speaks to us saying, if today maybe we're at the end of our rope, we're at the end of trying to make sense of things, we're at the end of our rope trying to make things better, trying to bring things about through our own effort, that we're the exact space today, God, where you could meet us with your grace. And so as we conclude this service today, just listening to the words of this song kind of wash over us, Lord, we confess to you that we need you, that we have all sinned and fallen short. And Lord, we're in the great space now where your grace can meet us. And we thank you for this in Christ's name. Amen.